Committee for Charlemont Borough Council. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available to the Council's website following the meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not interrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everybody present to please turn off their mobile phones or switch them to silent? That includes myself. To make sure that the meeting is distraction-free. In addition, please turn off all smart speakers on phones, Alexa, Siri, Cortona, etc., as these can record conversations and this could be a breach of GDPR. Voting will be undertaken by show of hands for, against or abstain. Speakers will be called forward at the appropriate time by the chair and brought into the room accordingly. They may stay in the public gallery for the debate for their item, but following that they'll be asked to leave by the chair to ensure continued social distancing. The speaker's table will be cleaned in between uses. Speakers have 5 minutes each and they'll be timed by a Democratic Services officer. When you have 1 minute of time remaining, you'll be advised. We have four items on the agenda tonight. The first item will be application number P/20/2361/2, Gelson Limited, Land off Halstead Road, Mount Sorrel. There'll be three speakers on this item. The first speaker will be Angela Botterill, objector. The second speaker is going to be Roy Thornley. Now, Roy, Gelson's have asked for this speaker to go on as a last-minute request or a late request, but the circumstances are exceptional. So I'm going to have to put now before the meeting whether everybody is prepared to accept that this speaker is allowed to speak. So I'll need a proposer for that, please. Thank you very much. So can I have a show of hands, please, all those in favour? Thank you. That's unanimous. Okay, I'll carry on. Councillor Sue Hollyoake of, on behalf of Mount Sorrel Parish Council will also be speaking on this item.
Councillor, I registered my intention to speak and I've been allocated a number 106-3393.
Sorry, I've just turned over the page and you're at the top of the next page.
Oh, okay.
Councillor Capleton, so I'm sorry. Yes, it appeared that you've been not left off there, but you haven't in fact. The second item will be application number P/20/11764/2. Mr. Phil Crawley, Pawdy View Farm, Pawdy Lane, Seagrave, LE74TB. There'll be three speakers on this. There'll be Philip Crawley, the applicant, Councillor Roger Brown on behalf of Seagrave Parish Council and Councillor James Poland, who's the ward councillor. For the third item, this is application number P/20/11764/2. The Stuart Sleaser of 46A to 46C Albion Street, Anstey, LE77DE. Two speakers on this. Firstly, there'll be Caroline Roberts on behalf of Jean Smith as the objector. And Councillor Deborah Taylor, ward councillor. Now, if Deborah Taylor can't meet the meeting, I have a statement to read out on her behalf, which I'll do if she's not here in time for that. Item four, application number P/21/15714/2, Moda International Brands Limited, land at Farriers Close, Wineswold, Leicestershire. There's no speakers on that item. We have received apologies. If I can ask Karen, please, to read out the apologies.
Thank you, Chair. We've received apologies from Councillor Ranson and Councillor Paling is subbing. Councillor Savage, although I was about to say Councillor Howe is here, though, so that's okay. And we've got apologies also from Councillor Fryer and Councillor Snarty's subbing as well. Thank you. And I've also received, just earlier, apologies from Councillor Lowe. And Councillor Grimley is not here yet, so Lau, I said, not how.
No, I'm
sorry. Ah, it's the other way round, is it? Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Councillor, how are you subbing for?
Councillor Grimley.
Okay, thank
right.
you.
That would explain why Councillor Savage is here then.
Yeah, Councillor Savage is here as well. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Item 2, minutes of previous meeting. This is something for you, I think, to read out, Karen, not for me.
Thank you. Which ones are, sorry?
The committee is asked to confirm as a record.
Right. The committee is asked to confirm as a correct record the minutes of the meeting held on the 21st of October. Can all the members show by show of hands that they are in agreement with those minutes? And thank you. So if you can sign those minutes, which I've actually, they're on peach coloured paper in front of you.
Okay.
You.
To pass that down. Right. Item 3, questions under committee procedure rule 12.8. Again, I'm going to ask Karen to come in on this.
So, thank you. A question on notice had been received from County Councillor Max Hunt regarding the Garradon Park development. A response was published yesterday as an extra, part of the extra supplementary agenda. County Councillor Max Hunt is not in attendance this evening to make a supplementary question, and therefore I ask that the committee note the item and the response published to the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Item 4, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Are there any disclosures of interests?
Thank you, Chair. The Councillor Capleton, I believe, has an interest in application P20-2361/2, which is item 1 on the agenda, as he will be speaking in the capacity as a ward councillor and therefore will not take part in the discussion or voting thereon, and also will be leaving the room at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Item 5, planning applications. Okay, item 1, planning application number P/20/2361/2, Gelson Limited, Land off Halstead Road, Mount Sorrel, LE127HG. The presentation is going to be by Lewis Marshall. Mr. Marshall, would you like to take over? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Can members hear me okay? Right, so item 1. Yep, so we are at.
Hold on.
Thank you. Right, so item 1, yes, we are land off Halstead Road, Mount Sorrel, Leicestershire. The application is for 50 dwellings, it's a full application. Before I get into. Presentation. Just a couple of matters to update members on. Mrs. Bottrell, who was due to speak as a resident objector this evening, has had to send her apologies. Instead, she has submitted what she would have said as a late representation. So I'm just going to summarise what she said now. So she has said, over the past 26 years, there have been more and more residential homes built in Mount Sorrel. These are family-sized residences. Building is still going on at Field Fair Estate on Halstead Road. Amenities haven't grown to support the population growth. The surgery has extended, but it's still unable to support the number of residents. The primary school is already oversubscribed with large classes. The feeder secondary school in Corn is also oversubscribed. We have one post office with limited opening hours. The bus route to support the Field Fair Estate has now been taken off. There's limited parking in the village and many more cars parking on roads as families have two or three cars. Our green spaces are disappearing, affecting not only walking in the countryside, but also wildlife. She's cited the population growth within the village between the 2001 and the 2011 census, which has increased by approximately 1,500. And she says the 2021 census results are not yet in. There is a further late representation that was received yesterday, which came in on behalf of the Parish Council. This relates to matters which are discussed on page 22 of the report in respect of planning obligations. As set out in the report, the parish requests that the developer reduce the quantum of affordable housing from 30 to 15%, with any money saved redirected towards a funding gap identified for their own open space project at Coughlin's Park. The contents of the letter and an independent legal opinion sought by the Parish Council was published yesterday. And in summary, this states that the Parish Council argue that all contributions secured should be treated as a single obligation for the purposes of applying Regulation 122 of the SIL regulations, and that the point of the Regulation 122 is to make sure that the total quantum of the contributions is proportionate to the scheme to which it relates. How the contributions are apportioned is not relevant to the application of Regulation 122, which is instead concerned with the question as to whether the overall basket of contributions or the obligation is too large. It also goes on to state that under or over provision of a contribution and any conflict with the related policy is a matter for the decision taker to give weight to in the overall planning balance. Officer's advice remains in response to this, as it is set out in the committee report. In summary, an inflated open space contribution which sought to provide for more than was strictly required to meet the needs of this single development would not be fairly or reasonably related in kind, and as such is not Regulation 122 compliant. Each contribution needs to stand up on its own merits against the tests of Regulation 122. Furthermore, the funding gap that has arisen in terms of the Coughlin's Park project is not as a direct result of the increased population generated by this development. Notwithstanding this, in respect of the planning balance, it is not considered that the benefits of securing additional funding for an open space project would offset the harms arising from an undersupply of affordable homes, when we know at the current time there is a shortage of supply in terms of both open market and affordable housing. Furthermore, it is most crucially, it's not for members to amend or alter the scheme at this stage. Members are required to consider the application before them on its merits and in line with the agreed heads of terms as set out in the report. So therefore, in summary, in response to the Parish Council's request, officer's advice is that there should be no change to the recommendation. So I'll get into the presentation now. So the application site consists of a single field parcel measuring 3.1 hectares in size. The plan you see here is the site location plan, with the site itself marked in red, which also includes the existing balancing ponds within the adjacent development, which would also serve the proposed development. The site is a flat piece of greenfield land located in the countryside, with the site's western boundary bound by a narrow row of trees and hedgerows and a small section of secondary track linked with the Great Central Railway, which terminates to the north of the site adjacent to Mount Sorrel Quarry. The northern boundary is bound by a cricket pitch, which is being delivered by the applicant, which forms part of the Coughlin's Park open space development. To the south is Halstead Road itself. In terms of Mount Sorrel as a settlement, it is defined as a service centre within the hierarchy, so has good access to facilities and services to meet day-to-day needs, with good access via public transport to centres of employment such as Leicester and Loughborough. This slide and the satellite image shows the site and surroundings in more detail. So the site is edged in red. There is I'll go round the site. So there's a small paddock to the west of the site with a single dwelling here. This is the section of secondary track which connects with the main Great Central Railway line in a sort of southeasterly direction away from the site. To the north of the site, this is the piece of open space which would form a cricket pitch. This is the adjacent development, which is under construction, nearing completion by the applicant. This is Halstead Road.
You need to put the pointer on.
Apologies.
There we go.
Sorry, I wasn't aware you couldn't see the Leicester.
Chair, can you just come in? We can see red on black.
Yeah.
You're going to have to look at the TV screen.
I don't know. Can we try the lights off?
It's all or nothing on the lights.
Oh.
Members can
That's not ideal. I didn't know that.
It's been fixed. We've paid someone to fix it.
It's worse than before.
It's worse than before. I'll go over to the No, it's not. It's not the same as on the screen. If you want to.
Oh.
No, it's not working. Karen, if you want to continue and members just stand for this one, I'll run over to the office and print the slides for the rest of this evening.
Okay, to continue, Chair.
Okay, you can continue.
Yeah, sorry, members, I wasn't aware you couldn't see the screen there. Right. So, as I was saying, this is the application site, which is edged in red. To the west of the site boundary, there's a small paddock here with, beyond that, a single dwelling and its curtilage. To the western boundary of the site, this is the line of the secondary track, which connects with the Great Central Railway. This is currently an unused track, but it does terminate to the north of the site adjacent to Mount Sorrel Quarry. The northern boundary is partially shared with what will be a cricket pitch, which will form part of the Coughlins Park development. This is a development which is underway and nearing completion, also being built by the applicant. This is Halstead Road. This is Walton Way, which serves a sort of large development which was built in Mount Sorrel through the sort of 90s and early noughties. This is an area of open space which is a local wildlife site. There's some allotments opposite the site, and then a smaller development here. And then this is Swithin Lane, which obviously connects with the Rothley Ridgeway area of Rothley further south. So moving on to site photographs, this is Bond Lane, close to Swithin Lane, looking southeast towards the site. There are mature trees on the boundary of the site, so you can just about see the existing dwellings within the adjacent development through the trees there. This is Halstead Road, so this is looking in a easterly direction towards the village of Mount Sorrel, so the site is on the left-hand side here. And again, you can just about see the adjacent development through the trees there. Again, worth noting at this point, obviously this is Halstead Road. It's a fairly, sort of, has a fairly open characteristic to it. This is looking across the adjacent paddock. So viewing over the neighbouring paddock towards the application site, this section of boundary hedgerow effectively marks the western boundary of the site. This is taken from Halstead Road, so this is taken from the southeast corner of the site, so it's looking in a northerly direction against the backdrop of those trees which form the boundary, which are again up against the line of the railway. And you can just about see here the adjacent development. And again, more clearly here in this photograph. So this is the field boundary, which is marked by existing trees and hedgerows, which would be retained as part of the proposal. This is from within the adjacent development. So it's within the sort of northern corner of the adjacent development, looking over the application site. So this is that same field boundary hedgerow, which I showed you in the previous picture. And this is taken from the mouth of the access to the adjacent development. So it's looking west along Halstead Road. So the development site is effectively on the right-hand side here behind this vegetation. So in terms of the proposed development, the application proposes 50 dwellings with landscaping, open space and access from Halstead Road. There are secondary pedestrian access points, which are here and here, which would provide access to the neighbouring development, but also the public open space to the north. There is this green corridor, which would be maintained along the eastern boundary, so both developments either side would contribute towards that green corridor. And there's also a defining feature of Halstead Road, which I've already said, is the fact that it is fairly open. It has fairly spacious characteristics. So there is this setback from the roadside to continue the building line with the neighbouring development. In terms of the sort of internal layout, there is this single main spine road that runs through the development with some secondary roads and private drives, blocks of housing sort of centred around a sort of a perimeter block type layout. As I said, there are 30% affordable houses proposed here, so they are in two blocks. So there's a block of nine in this location here and a smaller block of six in this location here. So these are some of the house types. There are 15 house types overall across the open market and the affordable dwellings. These are the three-bed open market dwellings, and these are the two- and three-bed affordable dwellings. There is some overlap between the house types used between the affordable and the open market, so they are truly distinguishable, or they're not distinguishable between each other. And these are just a couple of the larger house types as well, which again sort of reflect the sort of predominant character and style of the surrounding area. These are a couple of street scenes as well, just to supplement the previous slides. So obviously members can see how those dwellings would relate to each other. So this top street scene is the frontage across the front of the site. And this is another street scene which is sort of as seen from within the neighbouring development, sort of towards the northern boundary of the application site. So in terms of key considerations for members, the site is located outside of the defined settlement limits and is located in the countryside, but as members will know, policies that restrict the supply of housing in such locations carry reduced weight due to their age and because the council currently cannot demonstrate a five-year housing land supply, and therefore any conflict with these policies needs to be considered in the overall planning balance. It should be acknowledged that the proposal would conflict with these policies. Policy CS1 is the most important policy in the determination of the application. Further growth at this level of the settlement hierarchy and outside of the settlement limits would undermine the development strategy of policy CS1 and save policy ST2. But as I said, this conflict needs to be weighed up in the planning balance, having regard to the reduced weight that they carry. As the site is within the countryside, the proposal would also conflict with policy CT1 and CS11, which seek to restrict forms of development in the countryside, which includes the scale of housing proposed as part of this application. In terms of policy CS3, the proposal would provide a policy-compliant 30% affordable housing with a mix of two- and three-bedroom units. And the mix of the open market housing consists of three- and four-bedroom units and is considered acceptable overall, having regard for the character of the area. In terms of the design, layout and landscaping, it is considered overall that the scheme responds adequately to the local context as required by the relevant policies and the design SPD and would preserve the character and appearance of the area. It is considered that the layout and design would provide for a high standard of amenity for existing and future residents and there would be no significant or demonstrable adverse landscape impact. And the proposal is capable of providing different typologies of on-site and off-site open space in accordance with policy CS15. In terms of highway safety and access, the local highway authority has raised no objection to the application and advises that the access road layout and parking provision is designed in accordance with their standards. Crucially, Mount Sorrel is one of our more sustainable settlements which can meet day-to-day needs of residents with access to higher order settlements by public transport, and overall there would be no unacceptable or severe impact on the highway network in accordance with the framework. So, in terms of other matters, in terms of ecology, the application has been supported by an ecological appraisal and the layout would provide some mitigation in the form of landscaping and a condition is recommended that will require additional information and a scheme of ecological mitigation to be submitted and approved prior to the commencement of development. It is considered, however, that there would still be a net loss of biodiversity if the value of the site is taken in its existing condition. But it is a material consideration for members that this is an agricultural field that could be intensively grazed or ploughed at any time, thus losing some of its existing value. Nonetheless, the conflict with policy CS13 needs to be considered in the overall planning balance. In terms of drainage, the local lead flood authority has raised no objection to the application and has advised officers that the site is within flood zone 1 and would not exacerbate any existing drainage issues. So moving to the planning balance, where members are required to consider the harms and benefits of the proposal, and in line with paragraph 11D of the framework, there is a presumption in favour of sustainable development where permission should be granted unless the adverse impacts of doing so, or the harms, would significantly demonstrably outweigh the benefits. The proposed housing development would conflict with key housing and countryside policies of the development plan, and granting planning permission would result in some harm in this regard. But it is not considered that such harm could be significant or demonstrable on account of the reduced weight that these policies hold. The proposal would result in limited landscape and visual harm and would result in loss of countryside, biodiversity and agricultural land, and these harms weigh against the application. However, the proposal would provide 50 dwellings, 30% of which would be affordable, which would meet needs and contribute towards addressing the current shortfall in housing land supply in a location that has good access to local services and facilities and has been identified as an appropriate location for development as part of the development strategy for the future. The site is also considered a small or medium-sized site which can be delivered quickly, which at the current time is a positive aspect of the proposal. The proposed green infrastructure, which includes open spaces, would contribute to the health and well-being of existing and new residents, and development would support local businesses both during and after construction. It is therefore concluded that the adverse impacts of granting planning permission would not significantly outweigh the benefits that the scheme would offer at a time whereby the council is not able to demonstrate a five-year supply of housing land. The application is therefore recommended for approval, subject to the recommendations set out in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. So we've got four speakers lined up to speak on this. Was it Angela Bottrell who's not here?
Correct.
Okay, so our first speaker then is Rob Thornley on behalf of Gelsons. You have 5 minutes, Mr. Thornley. After 4 minutes, you'll be indicated that there's 1 minute remaining.
There we go.
Start when you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee for allowing me this opportunity to address you this evening. It's very kind of you to allow the late representation. I'm Rob Thorley. I'm Gelsons Land and Planning Director. As officers have explained and members will be clearly aware, the Council's currently in a position where it's unable to demonstrate a five-year supply of housing, and so there is a pressing need for it to release some immediate sites for development. It makes sense that where such a requirement exists, then those sites that are released now are those that are the most logical and sustainable, those which demonstrate the least harm, and which, importantly, will actually deliver housing quickly to help address the housing shortfall. It is considered that this site meets all of those requirements. The site is located at Mount Sorrel, which is a designated service centre. After Loughborough, Shepshed and the edge of Leicester, service centres are identified in both the existing and emerging local plans as the most sustainable location for new development. In terms of harm, the site itself is currently in use as pasture and is not identified as having any particular landscape or ecological value. Visually, the site is well contained by tree belts and the Grand Central Railway line to the north and west, and is adjoined by Gelson's existing development to the east, as well as existing historical houses to the south. Development of the site would, we believe, provide a logical rounding off of the settlement boundary, and also, importantly, form a logical extension to the ongoing Gelson development to the east. This also provides members with certainty that this development would be delivered quickly as a continuation of our existing development that's underway. The development would deliver ecological enhancements in the form of a 10-metre-wide corridor along the eastern edge of the development. When combined with a similar feature on the adjacent development site, this will provide a 20-metre-wide ecological corridor, which will be planted to maximise biodiversity gain. This corridor will also serve as a substantial buffer between the new houses and the existing houses on the Jarson estate. The development would deliver a policy-compliant level of affordable housing at 30%, over £300,000 towards local schools, over £130,000 to community recreation facilities, and £25,000 towards healthcare. Overall, the development is considered to provide a logical and sustainable response to the Council's current housing supply position, and is a development which accords with the principles of the emerging local plan. This has been recognised by officers in their report to you, and I would seek the committee's endorsement of the recommendation to approve. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. The next speaker is Councillor Sue Hollyoake on behalf of Mount Sorrel Parish Council. And again, you have 5 minutes to speak. After 4 minutes, you'll be indicated that there's 1 minute remaining. So when you're ready, if you want to get seated, and if you press the button in front of you, when the microphone turns red, the same as mine in front of me here, that's when your time starts. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and members, for the opportunity to address the Plans Committee this evening. I'm Parish Councillor Sue Hollyoake. I'm Chair of the Parish Council's Planning and Highways Committee. The Parish Council has considered the committee report on the application. The Parish Council initially objected on a number of grounds, the majority of which are dealt with in the report. We have also been conscious of the housing land availability situation and the likelihood of planning consent being granted. The Parish Council therefore wishes to ensure the most appropriate planning balance and beneficial solution for the community that will be achieved if development proceeds. Full submissions have been made to support that view. Essentially, the Borough Council's consideration is requested to achieve a revised Section 106 package which places greater emphasis on the provision of multi-purpose green infrastructure, and in particular the project known to and progressed by both councils for over a decade and described as Coughlin's Park. Mount Sorrel has expanded almost continuously for about 50 years through relentless western expansion. In that time, the population has more than doubled to about 9,000, but there has not been any additional open space or playing fields. This is a large problem recognised by the Borough Council back in 2010 in its Open Spaces Sports and Recreation Study. The study confirmed serious shortfalls, 6 acres of parks and 29 acres of outdoor sports facilities. That perspective has been reinforced by subsequent Charnwood Open Spaces strategies and its playing pitch strategy. All the sports clubs are constrained and many home games are played outside the village. For example, Mount Sorrel Juniors Football Club looks after 300 boys and girls but has to play lots of matches at Brooksby College. We have the equivalent of a 10-year waiting list for allotments. The 2000 study has the backdrop to a key planning decision by Charnwood Borough in 2014. Residential development was approved at West Cross Lane. The Coughlin's Park project was recognised as an appropriate community-based project which meets the SIL requirements. In view of local priorities, it was considered appropriate to reduce the affordable housing element from 30% to 15% and use the resulting additional funding contribution towards the Coughlin's Park scheme. Those funds are currently held by the Borough Council waiting to be spent. We are requesting the Borough Council to consider repeating that decision in the interest of the same project in this instance. A key constraint has always been land ownership, but the news is extremely positive. Part of the scheme is being brought forward by the current Gelson development. The remainder is being offered very generously at a peppercorn rent by Tarmac and the Lanesbury estate. Mount Sorrel therefore has a fantastic, perhaps once-in-a-generation opportunity. There is now an agreed master plan, and a Coughlin's Park planning application is about to be submitted to Charnwood. The project is a highly attractive scheme of public parkland, playing pitches, biodiversity enhancements, allotments and access to countryside. We believe that it is supported by all Charnwood's objectives and policies. Notwithstanding the 2014 Section 106 ring fence monies, a significant funding gap remains. Therefore, if the Plans Committee supports this application, Mount Sorrel Parish Council wishes respectfully to request the following. If permission is granted, it is subject to Section 106 position being reviewed to ensure best long-term benefit for Mount Sorrel. The review is carried out through immediate joint working by the applicants, borough and parish councils, and is as in 2014, by reducing the affordable housing element from 30 to 15%, with the resulting financial contribution being used to deliver the Coughlin Parks project. The conclusion of the review would be reported back to the Plans Committee at its meeting on December the 15th, and a final Section 106 decision will enable agreement to be concluded and the planning consent issued. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to make these points to your committee.
Thank you very much. Finally, I've got Councillor Capleton. Would you like to return to your seat, please, Councillor? All right, John. Councillor Capleton, once you sit down, if you could give the microphone button a wipe to save Karen coming down there and doing the job for you, if that would be helpful. It'd be helpful to Karen. If you would give the actual button that you'll be touching a wipe as well, please, John, that would be great. Thanks. That's it. Thank you very much. And you know you have 5 minutes to speak, and Karen will indicate to you when you have 1 minute remaining.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Holyoake has described the feelings of the Mount Sorrel about this development. The residents are very angry. That once again, Mount Sorrel is a target for house building. We thought the limit had been reached. The long and the short of it has been too much development in Mount Sorrel over the years, and the village is now suffering from the effects of this overdevelopment. By far, the preferred outcome of this application for residents and the parish council alike is that you refuse the application. However, we must recognise that there is legislation to be considered and there are external pressures involved, and you might feel obliged or even compelled to grant the application. If this is the case, we ask that you give very serious consideration to the submission made by Mount Sorrel Parish Council as to the allocation of S106 funds. Councillor Holyoake has described the proposed Coughlin's Park development and the benefit that could accrue to Mount Sorrel and the wider community. A 30-page submission was submitted by Mount Sorrel in June 2021. The essence of it is mentioned briefly on page 22 of your document packs. The 30-page document is available on Planning Explorer, as is the custom, but it wasn't circulated to members, so you might not have read it in full. The submission describes how the previous application, P13-1008-2, was refused in 2010 and 2012, one of the reasons being it didn't include any significant open space for sports development. The original application for 350 dwellings was reduced to 220. Eventually, a revised application was submitted, and this left a large area for 220 houses. This left a large area of open space to the north. This application was approved and the land beyond the development was left free for sports facilities. This land is still vacant and that is the land that they proposed to use for the Coughlin's Park. Then, later, an unrelated application for P14-00058 was submitted for a development along West Cross Lane, Mount Sorrel, on the border of Rothley. At the plans meeting, a plea was made to reduce the proportion of affordable houses from 30% to 15%, and subsequent increase in SO1 and SO6 funds be made available for community projects. The development was approved in principle, subject to funding further examination. The development was approved in principle, subject to further examination of the S106 allocation. This project is to enable the head of planning and regeneration to look into the possibility of reducing the affordable housing funds. Reduce the affordable housing to 15% with subsequent increase in 106 funds. The request was heeded and eventually approved and released £1.1 million towards community projects in Mount Sorrel to finance the Mount Sorrel Centre, Halstead Coffins Park partly, and Rothley Centre. We see the principles. We think that the principle applied in 2014, we see them as a precedent to be applied in this current development. We would like to see the proportion of available affordable houses reduced to 15% and the subsequent increase in funds, some 500,000, made available for the development of the Coffins Park and resulting sports facilities. We have had advice from solicitors, Shakespeare Martin News, supporting this viewpoint, and a copy of the letter has been submitted, but it was too late to be included in the extra papers. The budget for the Coffins Park scheme is estimated to be £1.6 million. We have £850,000 available already. That's £550,000 from S106 funds, £220,000 from other S106 from Gelson's, and Parish Council can provide £80,000. There's currently a shortfall of £810,000, and much of this could be provided as a result of this current application. If we can't make the money available through this application, it might not be possible to complete the project ever. There's no land, more land in Mount Sorrel that could yield the necessary 106 funds. We might even lose some of the land and some of the 106 funds if they aren't used in a certain time. Therefore, the reason given, should the Borough Council be minded to approve the current application, it is requested that consideration is given to repeating the decision reached by the previous Plans Committee to reduce the affordable housing provision from 30% to 15% and to utilise the increased financial contribution so generated towards the delivery of the Halstead Road Coffin Park project. It is said on page 22 of the current...
Councillor Capleton, sorry, I have to stop you there. Your 5 minutes is up.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Thanks. Would you like to return to your seat? Thank you. Mr. Marshall, can I bring you back in before we throw it open to the meeting to cover some of the points raised? Councillor Capleton, sorry, you'll need to leave the room now you've spoken. We'll call you back in as soon as the item's finished, Councillor Capleton. Mr. Lewis? Sorry, Mr. Marshall, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's only really one sort of key issue to come back on, which was obviously the sort of main theme in the Speaker's comments, and it relates to the planning obligations and the request by the Parish Council to reduce the provision of affordable homes from 30% to 15%, and instead redirect that money towards a local open space project which is being led by the Parish Council. Now, I did go over this matter at the start of the presentation, so I don't want to repeat myself considerably. And obviously, if members have got specific questions, I'll do my best to answer those during the debate. But I guess my only key points to make are, unfortunately, the application before members tonight is one where the applicant proposes a policy-compliant 30% affordable housing scheme. Notwithstanding that, any contributions that we agree to within the heads of terms I set out in the report need to stand up on their own individually as being regulation compliant, and those regulations basically set out that the contribution needs to be fairly and reasonably related in scale and kind to the development. Now, if our open spaces colleagues have made a request for an off-site open space contribution, it's in the region of about £47,000, it's set out in the report, and that calculation is based on the generated or the additional population generated by the development, and that as a contribution is considered to be reasonable and fairly related in scale and kind. Now, if the parish council are wanting to see an over provision of an open space contribution, it is our legal opinion that would not be SIL compliant. And obviously, we have to make sure the decisions we make are based on a sound legal basis. So, that's my advice to members on that particular point. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Marshall. At the moment, I only have one person indicating the wish to speak, and that's Councillor Gerrard. So, Councillor Gerrard, you're up.
Thank you, Chair. Point of clarification, please, and if it does go ahead, a commitment. I understand that the Steam Railway Trust has put in applications all along to Leicester. Would, as this backs onto it, would that make any difference to the development, please?
Mr. Marshall?
Thank you, Chair. Yep. Are you concerned in respect of the impact on the residents? Right, okay, yes. So you'll see in the report this is considered in terms of the amenity section. So there is a noise impact assessment that's been submitted as part of the application, and that proposes various measures to limit noise transmission from within the dwellings themselves. So they have to be built to a certain standard. And there is a condition as set out in the report which basically requires the development to be carried out in accordance with those noise insulation measures. And just for absolute clarity, it is condition 19 on page 28.
Can I just stop you there? Your microphone's on, Councillor Savage. That's it, thank you. Would you like to start again, Councillor Gerrard?
Thank you. On the development side, the roads are absolutely filthy, and I disagree. But as a condition, if this does go ahead, could the roads be cleaned very frequently, please, and not left to a fortnight or something like that? Thank you.
Mr. Marshall, would you like to come back on that?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so members will see on page 27 of the agenda pack, there is a condition that requires the submission of a construction management plan prior to the development commencing. This is at the request of the local highway authority, and as part of that, the applicant is expected to provide details of wheel washing facilities for construction vehicles on site. So providing the details of the details submitted as part of that condition acceptable, construction vehicles leaving the site should have had their wheels cleaned, and that would mitigate any impact in terms of sort of dirt and dust on the surrounding road network.
Thank you. I know they clean the vehicles, but it's not a regular occurrence. Could it be made really a strict occurrence? Thank you.
Mr. Marshall?
I can only reiterate the point that there is a condition requiring them to submit a construction management plan. We consult the Highway Authority when we discharge the details submitted as part of that condition. So it would be for the Highway Authority to look at the details submitted and consider whether they were acceptable.
Thank you. Next, I have up Councillor Charles.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going back to the point that I think Mr. Marshall has already answered, but just to clarify, When Councillor Caperton was speaking, he mentioned that the previous application in a similar area had been approved with the opportunity to go back to the head of planning to discuss the 106 agreement. And I'm just wondering, from what I understand from what you just said, yeah, that isn't a possibility now.
Mr. Marshall?
I don't want to go into the history of the neighbouring site too much because, as I said, members need to consider this application on its merits as the applicant has applied for, and that is for a policy-compliant 30% affordable housing. And they've agreed to the open space request that's been made by our own colleagues in open space, which obviously would go towards the, or potentially towards the Coughlins Park project. As the SIL regulations, as they currently stand, in our opinion, would not allow for contributions to be redirected towards something else.
Jacqueline Jackson, do you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Just to come in on that, I think you asked a technical question about whether we can do that. Sometimes we do that when the changes wouldn't affect the planning balance. Here, the changes that are being proposed would clearly change the balance in front of members because you'd be talking about less affordable housing. So it would be my suggestion that that shouldn't be delegated because you're here to make judgment on that planning balance.
Thank you. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Next, I have Councillor Start.
Chairman, thank you. In some ways, I can understand the frustration around housing coming in at Mount Sorrel. And if you go to the principle of proposed development within the papers we have for us tonight, it'll tell you that 4,460 homes have been completed or committed with service centres, and this is 45% more homes than provided for the core strategy. So you can see the way that development has gone in service centres. But we are where we are in terms of the core strategy and the weight that we can give to that tonight. So in my view, it is a bit frustrating that members find themselves in this way at the moment. So I know that recently we've had an appeal turned down because of this and the way we can put weight to the core strategy at the moment. But I just wanted to just move to one item where I was looking at the Great Central Railway have asked for a substantial fence in construction to prevent trespassing along the railway. And I just wondered if officers could beef up, if you like, condition 8, which is around boundary treatment and fencing. So if we could actually do a little bit more around that. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Marshall, would you like to come back on that?
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair. Yes, so there is, obviously the development does partially border that section of the Great Central Railway. It is private gardens that border the railway line itself. Officers have suggested a condition requiring details of all boundary treatments and fencing. And I'm happy to oblige to Councillor Snart's suggestion that in terms of the reason for that condition, we can also make reference to sort of the safety of future occupiers of the development as well, having regard for the proximity to the railway line.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Snart, was there anything else?
Or no.
Okay, thank you. So next up I've got Councillor Savage, followed by Councillor Tillotson. So Councillor Savage.
I'd just like to ask this reduction on the 30%, one of the speakers said it was set a precedent from the 200 houses. Why was the SIL compliant on the 200 houses and not on the 50? How could it be SIL compliant on the one where they got 1.something million and not on this one? And further, I'd just like to know, is it a precedent? Because there's some service centres around here who will be watching this very closely at the moment, because that it's going to be a precedent. We're all going to ask for less social housing to get developer contributions.
Uh, Thank you. Very good question. I'm going to put that to Mr. Marshall when he's had a job. Oh, he's finished now talking to Jacqueline Jackson. So, Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, Chair. So I've already made this point. I suppose what may have happened in the past, we sort of have to sort of discount at this point because, as I said, it's for members to consider the proposal that's before them. It's not within members' gifts to amend the scheme that's before them. It's not actually within officers' gifts to amend the scheme that's before them or that has been before them through the course of this process. The applicant has proposed a policy-compliant provision of affordable housing, and if members were not satisfied with that, the only option to them is to refuse the application, which I would advise against, because there are no, in my opinion, there are no grounds to defend that at an appeal. It's a case of planning balance. It would completely alter the planning balance. You know, in officers' view, when there is an acute need for housing, which includes affordable housing, it would upset the planning balance to reduce that provision and redirect the funds elsewhere.
Thank you, Councillor Savage. Did you want to come back on that at all? Are you satisfied with the answer?
I don't think he's answered my question at all. Why was it so compliant on the first one for the 200 houses up Halstead Road and not on the 50? And does it set a precedent, and can other service centres now request reduction in social housing to get more developer contributions, obviously? It's a no-brainer, but every service centre is going to do it and they've done it once, and now this is a second time. Is it a precedent?
Thank you, Councillor Savage. Yeah, I was going to say, if you'd like to turn off. Again, I'm going to put that back. This time I'm going to ask Jacqueline Jackson to come in.
Now, we were talking about an application that is, 6 years old or something like that. We have to consider it in the current development plan policy framework. So I can't tell you, I don't have the minutes of that meeting in front of me. I cannot tell you, I can't remember 6 years ago about what was said about civil compliance. It would have been considered. There's been an awful lot of case law in the last 6 years around CIL. So we can only advise you on where we are today in the current position today. There would have been a consideration. There would have been a balance for members to make about whether they thought that the affordable housing was more important at that time or whether something else was more important. We do get that now and again, especially when there's viability issues and we look into these sorts of things. So I can't, you're asking a question that I couldn't tell you the answer without going back to the minutes of that meeting. But in our opinion, particularly when there is we're in the housing need position that we are, affordable housing should be given very significant weight at this time. And that's our professional advice to you.
Thank you. I'm going to take the next speaker now. So that was Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very pleased to see the 30% contribution for affordable housing, and I would have been extremely disappointed if we'd been proposing reducing that. We need affordable housing in Charnwood, in Mount Sorrel. We need affordable housing. So I'm very pleased to see the 30%, and I propose accepting officer recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Tillotson. Before I take the next speaker, do I have a seconder on that? Thank you, Councillor Charles. Okay, Councillor Campbell, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'd just like to ask the officers about this 10-metre strip that Chelsea's have kindly given over to our beleaguered wildlife. Who's going to own it and who's going to manage it, please?
Another good question. Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, Chair. So, in terms of who would own it, we don't know at this stage. Obviously, it would be for the developer to potentially offer it to the council to adopt, or it may be transferred to a management company as and when the development is underway and has been built. Now, the final landscaping scheme is still to be agreed. There's a condition set out in the report so that we have control over the exact numbers, density and species in terms of the landscaping scheme. And there's also a condition that requires details of the management plan to be submitted as well. So we'd be looking at that management plan in consultation with our own ecologist and also our landscape officer, and also possibly our open space colleagues as well, to make sure that we were satisfied that the management of the open space would be acceptable over the lifetime of the development.
Thank you. Now, I've seen no more hands up. We have a proposal. It's been... I do apologise. Sorry, latecomer. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. It's a question for Mr. Lewis. I've looked through the report, and obviously as a ward councillor in another village, the bane of our lives as ward councillors is the construction traffic delivering to sites. Have we got a robust approved delivery route? I may have missed it. If I've missed it, I do apologise, Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Marshall, would you like to come back on that?
Thank you, Chair. The routes for construction vehicles is a difficult one because, as a local planning authority, you know, there's a question mark over whether we really have absolute control over where vehicles go on the public highway. No, there is not a condition in respect to this application that seeks to control where construction vehicles go. The Highway Authority have not requested it. They have suggested conditions. That wasn't part of their request.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to come back on that at all? Are you happy with that? Okay, well, before I put it to the... Councillor Campbell, would you like to come back?
I thought you were going to come back to me on my last question, because I'm a bit worried. When Gelson's built the housing estate at Mount Grace Road, we all thought we had open space for years, and next thing we know, Gelson put it up for sale and we lost it. So I'm just, you know, if this Temby district's not going to be 100% safe, I can't vote for it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, Mr. Marshall.
Obviously, I think the issue that's been referred to there is obviously a separate matter and can't be used to prejudice the outcome of this application. But as I said, I can only reiterate the point that we have landscape management plans which are enforceable, so we can ensure that they are available and maintained over the lifetime of the development for use by residents and the general public.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell, does that satisfy you?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Just one moment. There's a correction to point 14 in the pack in front of you. Mr. Marshall wants to come back and correct a mistake, apparently, that...
Thank you, Chair. Yes, in response to Councillor Palings, I overlooked the fact that, yes, actually on bullet point 3 within condition 14, details of construction traffic routing is a requirement of the condition. So, yes, we'll be looking at that in consultation with the Highway Authority.
At least we have one happy councillor. Okay, well, before we go to the vote, there's two councillors that haven't spoken yet. Do you want to speak now, either of you? No? Okay. So it's been proposed by Councillor Campbell. Councillor Tillotson was the proposer. Councillor Charles has seconded this application. Can I see all those?
Could we just check that that's as in the recommendation report? So there was some discussion earlier about possibly amending a condition or condition 8. That's part of the proposal or the proposal.
Councillor Councillor Tillotson, does your proposal include Councillor Snart? Yes, it does. That was, for the record, that's Councillor Snart's amendment. Okay, thank you. Can I have a show of hands? Okay, I think that's one. Is that four, Councillor Howe? Four. Thank you. And Councillor, anybody against? And one against. Thank you. Can you just confirm the numbers there for me, please? One, two, three. So there's 9-4, one against, and one's left the room, and there's two missing.
Thank you.
That's it. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. It's all right, Karen, it's being done for you, saving your poorly foot. Before we move on to the next item, if anybody wants a quick 5 minutes as a comfort break, we'll do that now. Councillor Gerrard, it's about 8 minutes past six. It's 8 minutes past six. Can we make sure this doesn't go on for longer than 5 minutes? Thanks. Right, thank you, councillors. We're going to carry on with the meeting now. So the next item is item 2, application number P/20/11/1176/2, Mr Phil Crawley, Pawdy View Farm, Pawdy Lane, Seagrave, LE7 4TB. Presentation by Sean Robson.
Thank you, Chair. Before I actually jump into the presentation, I just want to make members aware that certainly with regard to the extra report that was circulated, there was further comments that came in following the publication of the agenda. Those comments have been considered, and they do not alter the actual recommendation as per the actual report. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the application is for the erection of an agricultural building for the rearing of livestock. Pawdy Farm, Pawdy Lane in Seagrove. If I can take members through the slides, this slide that's on the that is visible.
And no, they've all got printouts.
On your printout, the first slide marked site location shows the application site central to the top of the actual slide. There's the green building, green roofed building, and there's a red line around it that delineates the application site. And as you can see, there's an access arrangement being formed or proposed to be formed onto Berrycot Lane. The remainder of the actual application site and the holding under the control of the applicant is that that's delineated in blue, the fine blue line around the plan. This actual slide was taken from Google Earth or Google Images, and from the actual slides or from your pack in front of you, you can see the existing buildings that are actually on this site. It's to the bottom left of the actual slide. You can just see there's two grey roofed buildings, two rectangular buildings. That's part of the same holding. The application itself, the proposal, is to the triangle piece of land towards the top. Sorry, thank you. Yes, thank you very much. It's going to this area here. You can see from the point on the screen within the actual seating area. These next photographs just show or give members a flavour of the area, the surrounding area to the site. This is taken from Berrycot Lane. There's the buildings or the existing buildings you can just see in the distance above the actual hedgerow where the red pointer is. This is another photograph taken a little bit further down the lane. You can just see the existing buildings in the distance again through the broken hedgerow. Again, taken from Berrycot Lane. And you can see the application or the existing buildings, part of the same holding. I'm just circling now with a pointer. This photograph just shows the application site, or part of the application site, where the proposal is going to go. It's worth noting, again, you can see the existing buildings just in the distance here. They're actually on a lower level to the actual application site. This is a slightly higher level, or is a higher level, within the actual landscape than those existing buildings. Oh, sorry, yes. My apologies. If I can just... Yes, I'm indeed. I have to have a copy of this. Lovely, thank you. Sorry, just to jump back into it. This is slide number 27. This, and you can see to the left of the actual photograph, you can just see the buildings in the distance, the grey roofed buildings. It's, you can just see an actual, it drops away the landscape, but that's the actual existing buildings. Slide number 28, the next one. This just shows a more stark view of the actual site and surrounding area. This is slide number 29. This is just taken a view looking down Bericot Lane. Slide 30, this shows the existing access arrangement to the current holding, Pawdy Farm. This is just taken in to the right of the actual photograph, the existing access arrangement. And slide 31 is just me rotating within the access arrangement, existing access to the site, looking the opposite direction up Pawdy Lane. Slide number 32, this is just another shot of the actual application site that was submitted as part of the proposal. Again, just the blue line delineating the wider holding, the red line delineating the application site, and the green building, the green roof building, that's the application proposal, with the access road serving it, and additional ancillary features and equipment around the site, such as feed silos. There's underground storage, wastewater storage. There is an attenuation pond or area just to the boundary of the application, red line application site, that is. Slide number 33 is just a blown-up version of that that was submitted as part of the application that just clearly shows what I've just described, the attenuation pond, the building, in green, the access formed onto Bericot Lane, that serves the site, the silos serving the actual building itself. And this slide just shows the application building that's currently been considered. The actual size of the building is, just bear with me, the length is 123 metres, the depth of the building is 29 metres, and the height to the ridge is 7.357 metres, with the height to the eaves of 3.4 metres. This slide just shows the ancillary structures proposed as part of the application. That's slide number 35. And slide number 36 just shows the proposed landscaping as part of the application site around the red line within the larger blue line holding. Just before I take members through the key issues, it's just worth and a point I just didn't make clear at the beginning. My apologies. The application site is the building is proposed to actually rear chickens from the point of lay, so small chicks, up to the point when they become hens, where they can lay the actual eggs themselves. The point of lay pullets, as they're referred to, will be used to supply the applicant's existing free-range chicken production units and replace stock within those units. The chicks will be delivered to the site and reared within the building until 17 weeks. So there's a 17-week cycle from beginning to end, rearing the actual chickens. And then they'll be removed from the actual building and, as I said, supplied or restocked existing laying stock in other buildings on this actual site and elsewhere within the district. In terms of the key issues, a principle of development. The starting point for the decision making on any application is it is made in accordance with the development plan unless material considerations indicate otherwise. This application site is located in the countryside where the principle of agricultural development and use is accepted in accordance with policy CT1 subject to there being no harm to the countryside. It is considered that this proposal accords with this policy, that's CT1, CT2 and CS1. In terms of the design and impact of the character of the countryside or the area, in design terms, the development is considered to be acceptable and complies with core strategy CS2 and is what is generally expected from agricultural type buildings within a rural setting. A number of objections have been received in regard to the elevated status of the application site and the impact the building or siting of this building will have on the wider actual rural setting. It's accepted, and as set out on page 39 to 40 of the actual agenda, that there will be an impact on the surrounding rural area. However, this harm or this potential impact will be reduced over time through the landscaping, which will not disguise the building. Nothing can disguise a building of this size, but it will help break up the form of the building, which is a general building that's normally associated within a rural setting. In light of this, it is not considered that this would form a valid reason to refuse the application on such grounds or that it could be justified. Turning to the impacts on the environment, in regard to potential impacts of noise, odour and flies, these potential effects would be controlled through an environmental permit, an EA permit, and mitigated by conditions as set out in the report. The Environmental Health Officer has raised no objection to the application and has reiterated that the use and the management of the farm and this building associated with that farm will be controlled through a permit, an environmental permit. It is considered, therefore, that the proposal would not have an adverse impact on the environment in terms of the residential amenity or health due to these considerations. Turning to highway safety, a number of concerns have been received by the parish council and some concerned residents about the routing of vehicles and certainly the use of Berry Cot Lane. No objections have been received to the proposed development from the County Council's Highway Officer. That is acknowledging that and taking account of what the proposal will generate. And just for completeness, the proposal will generate a number of vehicular movements to the actual proposal. This will equate to 372 movements per annum. That's not 372 vehicles or 372 times two. That's just a vehicle going in and out, but there's going to be 372 movements over three 17-week cycles throughout the year. This is set out in detail on page 41 and 42 of the report. And as can be seen within that section, the Highway Officer is satisfied with the proposal, and the proposal itself also includes on Berry Cot Lane two passing bays, which are again have been deemed acceptable by the Highway Officer, that will allow passing points for vehicles using that lane. And it should be noted that lane itself just goes on to serve a number of agricultural uses down that lane. It's not a through road or serving other types of uses. Therefore, in conclusion, and in summary, the application as it's proposed for the erection of the agricultural building in a rural setting is not considered to raise any issue with regard to the actual use itself, the impact on the wider area that cannot be mitigated, or vehicular movements to the actual use. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Robson. We now have three speakers, the first being Philip Crawley, the applicant. Mr. Crawley, if you'd like to take the seat down here. You have 5 minutes to speak. After 4 minutes of speaking, with 1 minute remaining, there'll be an amber light shown. Once you've finished speaking, if you'd like to return back to the seats behind you, or you may leave the meeting or continue to watch the rest of the item. So when you're ready, press the button down here. When the microphone turns red, you have 5 minutes, starting from that point.
Good evening, Mr. Chairperson and members of the Planning Committee. My name is Philip Crawley, and I'm a director of Sunrise Poultry Farms Limited, along with my brother, and we are the applicants, and I'm here to speak in favour of the application. The application is for a pullet rearing house to house 64,000-day-old chicks, rearing them up to around 17 weeks of age when they will be transferred to the laying accommodation. This will be the second house of its type for Sunrise, The first one is situated at Abcaffaby near Melton Mowbray and has been in operation since March 2020. There has been no complaints since the operation of this site. We are very pleased as to how the house at Abcaffaby is operating and have now completed four flocks of pullets, all of which have performed brilliantly in their laying accommodation. The second house that I'm here to talk about today will make us almost 100% self-sufficient in rearing our own pullets. It will allow us to rear six of the seven intakes for the free-range birds on our farm. It is also sustainable, very sustainable, in the fact that the birds will move less distance from their rearing accommodation to their laying accommodation. All of the laying farms are within 8 miles of this site, so causing minimal stress when they move. Currently, our birds are reared either in North Yorkshire or Devon. We are not building this to commercially rear pullets for other producers, only for our own usage. There have been concerns about HGVs accessing Seagrove via Berwickett Lane. I have an HGV licence myself for articulated vehicles and have done for some 31 years. I understand these concerns and would certainly not go down Berwickett Lane myself. The site entrance will be designed to funnel traffic in a northerly direction away from Seagrove up to the Portie Lane and then on to their final destination. Signage will also be placed to ensure vehicles do this. All heavy goods vehicles will access via the Portie Lane and travel on Berwickett Lane in a southwesterly direction to the access site and then travel in a northeasterly direction off-site back up to the Portie Lane. For HGV movements, we estimate the following. Two chick lorries every 20 weeks. An average of one food delivery per week, less when the birds are young and more when they're older. Two tractors and trailers taking manure off-site each week. On turnaround, at the end of the cycle, there will be eight trailers, two per day, over a four-day period to move the pullets to their laying accommodation. This will occur over the same week. The cycle is of 20 weeks, that is 17 weeks of rearing birds and 3 weeks to allow clean-out, disinfection and restocking. At the end of the cycle, there will be an additional six tractors and trailers to remove the scratch air manure. The Highways Agency have recommended various passing places to facilitate the flow of vehicles along Berwickett Lane from the site and access with its junction on Portie Lane of around 650 metres. This is a straight road with good visibility either way. You may ask why we cannot use the existing access to the other units on the Portie Lane for this building. Hygiene and biosecurity are of the utmost concern for this site. As the chicks arrive at day old, they have no immunity or resistance to disease. And hence, any staff on this site will be dedicated to that site, and visitors will only be on a shower-in basis to maintain cleanliness and make sure no potential disease is brought onto site. The vast majority of vaccinations are given to these birds in their first 16 weeks of life, as most vaccinations are given to children before they become adults. We need and want these birds to be as strong as possible prior to the move to the laying accommodation, and having a dedicated site, dedicated staff, and dedicated access will aid us in doing this. There will not be an internal road built on site to link up with the other buildings, as we perceive this to be a risk to the biosecurity, a risk we are not willing to take. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. The next speaker I have is Councillor Roger Brown on behalf of Seagrove Parish Council. If you'd like to take the seat, please. Karen, that's right, I'll ask. Mr. Brown, when you're seated, if you can take one of those wipes from the container to your left there and just wipe down the controls for the microphone, that would be great. Okay, thank you very much. And when you're ready, when you press the red button, your 5 minutes will start. After 4 minutes, Karen will indicate to you that you have 1 minute remaining, and there'll be an amber light that shows up at the end of this rostrum here. If you prefer an indication verbally, she can let you know you have 1 minute remaining. Would you prefer it verbally, or are you happy with the amber light?
Amber light's fine, thank you.
Okay, thanks. So when you press the button here, and the red light comes on to the microphone, you have 5 minutes.
Okay.
Right, thank you and good evening. Seagrave Parish Council has been opposed to this application from the outset, and we've made it clear on several occasions that the reason we opposed it is the applicant's intention to use Bericott Lane for entry to and exit from the site of HGVs and other vehicles. As you've heard, we continually have heavy goods vehicles using the village roads, completely ignoring the weight restrictions and the agreed routes. The most used excuse given by drivers is, well, I was following the sat-nav. We've even had coaches on Bericott Lane travelling to the LCFC training ground. I hope that some of you have been able to look at the proposed site and have seen Bericott Lane. But in case you haven't, I can tell you that the view looking southwest from the top of the lane across the Soar Valley, and that's at the north end, and the highest point there is a stunning view on a fine day. And this will be lost completely due to the height of the proposed building. Bericott Lane is a bumpy, single-lane, Class C road, wide enough for one vehicle, and to give you some idea of the width, if I lay in the middle of the road with outstretched arms like this, I could just about touch both sides. The lane gives access to fields and farms, and it ends in the village at a very tight T-junction, which HGVs cannot negotiate without causing damage to the verges. Furthermore, there is a sign at the turn into Bericott Lane from Pawdy Lane, installed by LCC Highways, which says unsuitable for heavy goods vehicles. Also, it's beyond reason that the lane is subject to the national speed limit, whereas Pawdy Lane, which as I said, Bericott Lane joins at the north end, is a wide, open road with gentle bends, and this has a 50 miles per hour speed limit. The lane is used extensively for leisure by walkers, runners, cyclists, dog walkers and horse riders. And just 12 days ago, we had 500 walkers and runners on the lane during a charity fundraising event. And of course, during the pandemic, it's seen much greater use. Vehicles cannot pass on Bericott Lane without one or both mounting the verge. The applicant has proposed to install lay-bys to allow incoming and outgoing HGVs to pass. But this will just enable and encourage parking for people using the lane and will probably lead to more fly-tipping. I've mentioned Pawdy Lane several times, and this is already used by British Gypsum and Sunrise Poultry lorries. We propose that if this application is granted, it should be on condition that access is from Pawdy Lane through the existing entrance. And the problems that have been mentioned are not insurmountable. Furthermore, we propose that all HGVs be banned from Bericott Lane. I know that the applicant has provided projected traffic movements, but only for lorries. There will be lots of smaller vehicles travelling to and from the site which have not been included. And another question that springs to mind is, what about the heavy lorries that will be used during the construction phase? Finally, ladies and gentlemen of the Plans Committee, I hope that we're not just going through the motions here, and I respectfully ask that you'll give our request some really serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Councillor James Poland. Councillor Poland, I think you know the drill. Do you want a verbal indication, 1 minute remaining, or are you happy with the amber light?
I'm happy with the amber light, Chairman. Do you want me to wipe it down?
Yes, please.
Yeah, get the marigolds on. Let's have a go here.
Thank you very much. Start when you're ready.
Good evening, members. The reason I've called this application in today is because of the concerns I've got around HGVs using Bericott Lane for access to the application site. I should say I have no objections to the shed per se. It is, for me, my concern is entirely around the use of Bericot Lane for access and egress of the site. Bericot Lane is a single track road which is used extensively by dog walkers and other pedestrians exercising, as we've heard, and is probably comparable in width to a domestic driveway, nowhere near wide enough for two cars to pass each other, much less adding HGVs to the road as well. Bericot Lane joins Pawdy Lane, which is the Six Hills to Barrow Road, at one end, and King Street in the village centre at the other. King Street is residential, although also single track and rural in nature, but despite a weight limit being in place, the village already suffers some heavy goods vehicles through it, which has been used to access the LCFC site despite weight limits. As has been said before, the reason usually given is sat-navs. The roads, for me, and if members know the road, they'll be able to picture what I'm talking about here. The road is completely inappropriate for this kind of traffic. To give you, I'm obviously the ward councillor, I know the area well, and I don't go down there in my car and prefer to go the longer route to make it on bigger roads. And this application, by having its entrance and egress on Bericot Lane, is only likely to make the problem worse. As has been stated, Highways haven't put an objection into this application. As we know, Highways rarely do, but what I would like to highlight to the committee is a sign very recently placed at the top of Bericot Lane by Leicestershire County Council saying, unsuitable for heavy goods vehicles. So Highways themselves agree that the road is not suitable for the weight of traffic proposed to be put down this application, despite choosing not to object here. I really would like to stress this point to members. Highways are saying, on one hand, it is not suitable, and here's a sign, and we put money in putting a sign up saying it's not suitable, and on the other hand, we haven't objected. Which is it, please? There is a solution to which would resolve my concerns, and that is to put, as has been said, the exit onto Pawdy Lane, the other side of the site, which is a road which already takes HGVs from the British Gypsum Quarry. It has direct access onto the A46 at Six Hills and would negate the requirement of heavy goods vehicles to use such a small track lane, as well as the risk of additional HGVs coming through the village. If access cannot be changed as a condition of this application, then I believe the application should be refused and any future reapplication on the site should take the concerns raised into account when determining the entrance and egress in regards to HGV use. If, however, members are minded to approve this application, I would request that a condition be included to ensure that entry to the site and exit from the site can only come from Pawdy Lane and cannot turn right or left, so to avoid the King Street, basically. So that would be a condition, if you are minded to approve, that I would request. But if it is possible to have as a condition, I would not object to this application if entrance and egress could come from Pawdy Lane rather than Bericot. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you. I'll just wait for you to return to your seat. Thank you. Mr. Robson?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. If I can just, through you, come back on just the main press, what seems to be one of the main pressing points at this moment in time. There may be others through debate that I can come back on, but just with regard to the proposed vehicular access onto Bericot Lane, that's what the application proposes. That's what members have been asked to consider as part of the proposal. Unfortunately, you can't put a condition on that the access is then switched to Pawdy Lane. If members were to consider or take on board that they didn't want to see an access onto Bericot Lane, then this application as it stands would have to be refused. But the only caution I would stress on that one is that Highways haven't objected to it. That could make it very difficult were it to go to appeal. But and also, if I can just draw members' attention, you haven't got a copy in front of you, but paragraph 111 of the MPPF is quite explicit in terms of its direction to authorities that development should only be prevented or refused on highway grounds if there will be an unacceptable impact on highway safety or the residential cumulative impact on the road network would be severe. Now, in the absence of that highway impact being clarified or that actual problem being brought forward, an acceptable impact being identified by the County Council Highway Authority, that unfortunately doesn't leave as much room. But if members were to, the other point that the ward councillor mentioned there about the possibility of having an access arrangement, so it made it difficult for, you could enter the site in a one direction, but leaving the site you can only go one particular way, that could be part of a design element to look at the actual access arrangement. That is something that could be potentially considered were members minded to do so.
Okay, thank you for that. It is interesting to note, if what we've been told is correct, the Leicestershire County Council has actually posted signs to say that the road isn't suitable for heavy goods vehicles and yet don't have any objection to this application.
That does seem a little bit unusual, to say the least. I mean, the fact that they've positioned their signs, which could have been done, I'm speculating, by other sections within the County Council, and the advice we've got on the application from the officers that look at the residential, commercial, industrial type applications to the various district and boroughs, in this particular instance, is that there's no objection subject to conditions.
I don't feel particularly comfortable with that, to be honest, but anyway, so far I don't see anybody indicating... I've got Councillor Snart, if you'd like to go first, Councillor Snart.
Thank you, Chairman. Could I just ask officers, I was looking at... condition 8, which says no part of the development hereby permitted shall occupy until such time the access arrangements, and this is Ian Pick Associates Limited drawing number, and it says to ensure vehicles entering and leaving the site may pass each other clear of the highway in slow and controlled manner. Could we have a bit more information on that? Is there information on one of the drawings that you've put on tonight? And I'm just wondering about the lay-bys, could you just tell us a bit more about that? So is it because of the lay-bys that it would change, that heavy vehicles would be okay to go down that lane because of the actual... do we know that, or is it just that two departments of the County Council probably have not been talking to each other? It could be that the... information about lay-bys may be the difference between making it right for heavy vehicles. So I think, being as it's been brought up a lot tonight, we need a little bit more information about what it is and a bit more about that drawing, if we could.
Just before you come back on that, rather than lay-bys, do you mean passing places?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, passing places.
Yes, through you, Chair. Unfortunately, the drawing isn't part of the actual presentation, but the condition 8 has been pulled through, and that forms part of the response that came back from the County Council Highway officers to do with the passing places, the two passing places that are proposed to be installed within the highway verge. That's what one of the reasons, or part of the, I believe, part of the actual rationale behind them actually saying that the proposal is acceptable or deemed to be acceptable because of the actual implementation of those, and hence why the wording is such that obviously that they are brought forward prior to the actual building being brought into use.
More a little bit. Could you just give us an indication how long from Pawdy Lane to the entrance to the actual site? How long is that stretch? Do we know?
I'll just refer back to my file.
Whilst you're looking for that, I'm just going to go to the next speaker, who's Councillor Tillotson. Yes, Councillor Tillotson first.
Thank you, Chair. I share the concerns that you've expressed about the strange... situation we're in with the County Council. And so I'm asking, is it possible we could defer this application and ask for clarification, because Councillor Poland tells us that this unsuitable for HGV sign has only recently been installed. It's not that it's a historic thing that's been there years and years, which I assumed when we were listening to the parish councillor speaking. And ask them to clarify how come they've put this sign up to say it's not suitable and yet they haven't objected. And at the same time, if we did ask for a deferral, could we go back to the applicant and suggest to them that if they were to change the entrance to a more suitable road, that we'd be more inclined to support it?
Yes, thank you for that, Councillor Tillotson. Before I put that proposal to the members, I'm just going to take Andy, Councillor Paling.
Thank you, Chair. It's a question for Mr. Robson. We've heard a lot of talk about Bericut Lane and people using it for dog walking, cycling, riding, horse riding, etc. Do we have any data in terms of road traffic accidents?
Mr. Robs?
Sir, thank you, Chair. Through yourself, if I can come back to a couple of the points that have been raised. In terms of the data on road traffic incidents along Bericut Lane, no, I haven't got that information at all. That's something that, unfortunately, I haven't been presented with, or it wasn't submitted as part of the proposal. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but the Highway Authority were the best paid people to provide that information. Unfortunately, that hasn't been forthcoming. Just in terms of the positioning of the access arrangement to where it actually just does actually join Pawdy Lane or converges and onto Pawdy Lane, that's approximately, it's a little over 900 metres on there. I've scaled it off a plan. It's somewhere around that, but that's the distance. Going back to Councillor, Tillotson, sorry, my apologies, Councillor. In terms of, you mentioned if members were or could possibly defer an application, I mean, that's something that's within the actual option of members to consider and bring forward, obviously, and ask those specific questions to be clarified and ratified before it's actually referred back to yourselves. Thank you.
Jacqueline Jackson, would you like to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the deferral, you were suggesting it could be deferred on two grounds, one to clarify with the County Council and one to look at a different option. I think you'll see from the application site, the red line doesn't allow for that, and the applicant in his speech made some very clear suggestions why that wasn't possible under their environmental licence. So it wouldn't be practical to do that through the deferral. You could look at the access arrangements that are there, you could look at its design, but you wouldn't be able to extend the application site and do that through a deferral. It is what's in front of you.
Councillor Hill.
Thank you, Chair. I share the concerns with the I've been down the lane. It's very narrow. I can't understand why the highways haven't got involved. I mean, if we're having passing places, they've got to be large for an HGV. They've got to be enforceable that people can't park in them. Because if we build passing places that people park in, it negates them. And, I mean, I can see lorries churning up the grass verges. And on the corner of Pawdy Lane as well, cutting across there. I mean, we don't know the size of the passing places or whether, to my mind, they've got to be legally enforceable. You can't park in them. So I can't understand why LCC haven't intervened in this. My other concern is screening the buildings off. It is an open area. As the person from the parish council said, there's views and everything. And looking at the landscape, there's just a few trees. I mean, I've been told that
agricultural buildings are different than industrial buildings, whatever. But I'd still like the thought that if we're putting something in open countryside like that, we'd try and screen it off as much as possible. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. On the topic of the screening, there's a reason why there isn't more dense screening. And I'm just going to put that back to Mr. Robson, who will answer that question. And then after that, it's Councillor Charles.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. Through you. In terms of the screening or potential screening off uses within countryside locations such as this, there's a very fine line that you tread when you're looking at a building within a rural setting as to whether or not you screen it off. And if it's devoid of any mature screening in the existing vicinity, by putting in additional screening or completely blanketing screening the building, you are in effect creating then creating an alien feature within the actual landscape, which is may have sporadic planting at field edges, field boundaries, within the actual hedgerows. But to have a dense coppice of trees within one corner of a field where there's a use behind it, that in itself could be perceived as being uncharacteristic to the open nature of the countryside when you've got the rolling fields and meadows and so forth. So there is a line to be drawn, or fine line to be drawn, between helping to break up the form and completely trying to blanket it out, which in itself could be considered to be detrimental. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Charles?
Thank you, Chair. I don't really see how we can come to a decision when we are not sure as to whether this road is suitable for HGVs or not. And I think I agree with Councillor Tillotson, maybe a deferral and a question to the highways to confirm would clear this up. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to Jacqueline Jackson for a bit more clarity on this. I think she's probably seeing the direction of travel the way this is heading.
Okay. As Mr. Robson has already pointed out, it's an option to members to defer. You have to have good reason and you have to set out those reasons, which I think you've been debating, so that wouldn't be a problem. If that was your choice, then it would be the same way as you would approve or refuse an application. It will need a proposer, it will need a seconder, it will need a vote, and you know that would be the resolution of the evening. But members need to be clear about the reason why they're deferring it and be assured that that's reasonable, you know, and that you don't have enough information in front of you to make the decision. The Highway Authority have given their views, but we can go back for clarification if that's what members want.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm going to go back to Councillor Tillotson because you raised this first of all. It sounded as if you were going to make a proposal for deferment. If that's the case, then would you make the deferral based on the need for clarification, based on the information that was received tonight with regards to the County Council signposting the lanes unsuitable for heavy traffic, even though they made the comments that they made previously? We need clarification before being able to make a decision. Would you be happy to make a proposal on that basis that it's deferred until clarification is sought?
Exactly that, Chair, yes.
Okay, thank you. And Councillor Charles, you're happy to second that?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else like to make any comments on this before we go to the vote? Can I just put it back to Councillor Stark first, Councillor Gerrard, and then I'll come back to you, and then Councillor Howe.
I think there's classic clarification needed on the type of passing points as well, in terms of what they are, where they are. If you've got 900 metres of load, it's quite a distance, in my view, and I think that needs to be put in there as well. Thank you.
Councillor Stark, are you suggesting that maybe there should be more passing places than that?
I think...
Or we need more detail on what's being proposed?
Okay. Well, it's not only... it's brought up before, I think it was Councillor Howe brought up, saying that we don't understand if there's some restrictions going to be placed on there, because anybody could park in them and cause a problem. So we need some clarification around what they are, where they are, and how they actually see those operating.
Okay, and perhaps the length of them, because if they need to accommodate articulated vehicles, that needs to consideration.
Chair, if I can just come in. That detail's on the plans that have been submitted. I know they've not been in the presentation, but they are on the electronic file, so members can view those.
If I can, Chair, if we are going to contact the County Council, could we include in that whether they would be willing to put parking restrictions on these passing places as well?
That seems like a sensible suggestion.
Through you, Chair. It's parking restrictions are covered by a different legislation, a different, you know, a road traffic order. So that has to go through a public consultation process. So they would not be able to say whether they would do that or not as part of the application consultation.
I do understand it takes quite some time to get double yellow lines adopted on a road. I think it's about 2 years, but that might be a sensible arrangement going forward to make sure these things just aren't used as lay-bys. Possibly.
Through you, Chair. Like I said, it would be a traffic order thing, so it's not for the local planning authority to deal with parking restrictions. It's for the highway authority.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just have clarification, please? We are voting about referral to the entrance on the said entrance for this rather than Pawdy Lane. It's the actual entrance and the uses. No?
No, it's the lane that the access lane into here. It's been suggested by two people tonight that it's not suitable. I don't know the lane personally, but apparently it's been signposted as unsuitable for heavy goods vehicles. I think it would be remiss of us to pass this tonight. I personally don't have any issue with the use of the land. It's agricultural land. There's no problem with the application. It's the access and the use of this road that is the issue. Mm-hmm. And that, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask Jacqueline Jackson to come back in again.
Just as a bit of advice, if members, there's a deferral recommendation on the table, so I'm going to come in and give you this part of the advice. The deferral is the deferral of the decision on the application. It's not regarding any part of the application in particular, it's the deferral of making the decision. And the reason that you're deferring making the decision is because you'd like greater clarification on the highway impacts, including whether the road is suitable given other signs on the road. I would advise you against, if that is what you're likely to do, debating the rest of the merits of it, like whether you would think it was acceptable or not, because you will be doing that again when it comes back in front of you and you're considering the application as a whole. You know, you don't want to be predetermined or anything. So obviously, if you're not going to defer it, then please debate all you like. But, you know, if you are, then you might want to defer it and save the other merits for when it comes back, unless you're going to ask for more clarity on something else. Are you happy with that, legal? Yeah.
Yes, thanks for that. I couldn't have put it better, any better myself. Okay, so does anybody else want to come back, yeah. Councillor Gerrard?
I'd just like to say thank you. That has clarified what I was thinking. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else like to comment on this before we go to the vote? Councillor Howe.
In view of what's been said, I don't want to say anything else. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Right, so it's been proposed and seconded that this is deferred until we have clarification from Leicestershire Highways. Can I see all those in favour? Can I see all those against? And no abstentions, is there? No, okay. I think that's 10-4, one against.
Yeah, I think it was 11-4, one against.
Oh. You sure?
Oh, was it 10? Sorry. Go again.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry,
yeah.
Chair.
Okay, thank you.
10-4, one against.
That item is now being completed. So if those in the gallery would like to leave the room, or if you could stay if you wish till the end of the meeting. Councillor Howe, could you take your seat, please? Okay, if we're all ready, so we're now on count. Item three. This is application number P/20/1176/2, Stuart Sleasor, 46A to 46C, Albion Street, Anstey, LE77DE. And this is being presented by Sean Robson. Mr. Robson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. This application relates to the variation of a condition that was imposed on an earlier application. The earlier application related to the change of use of the first floor of an existing brewery, from a storage stroke office space to a pop-up pub, which is sui generis in use, and the use of the outside space for seating areas stroke smoking areas associated with that pop-up use. Slide number 39 on the members' pack. That's not too bad, but still a little bit unclear. This just shows the extent of the application site. The photograph here, slide number 40, is taken from Google Earth, which shows the actual site itself that's demarcated. You can see where it says Mash and Press. If you go further to the north of that, where the axis comes off Albion Street, it's between two existing uses. Where it says UPS point, that's a shop. It goes through, there's a gap between that and the building on the corner that fronts onto Edward Street and Albion Street. That's the access point to the application site. The next few photographs will just illustrate that a little bit easier. Slide number 41, which is just a shot looking along, a view looking along Albion Street. You can just see a white fence and door that's actually sandwiched between the shop and the residence. That's the access point to the actual use or the brewery and the actual sui generis pop-up brewery itself, activity. This is just a view taken from Edward Street. You can just see in the centre of the actual photograph there is a lower-pitched building with a series of roof lights and a sign that's almost at the apex of the roof. That's the existing brewery and where the actual pop-up use is above there for the actual pub itself. And the garden, you can't see from this angle, but it's to the front of that, i.e. to the front of the elevation where the actual sign is. This is a better photograph showing the actual site entrance. That's the white gate. This is taken from Albion Street. This is the photograph showing the site in question, where there's the seating area and the actual use that's currently restricted under condition number 5, which is the purpose of the application in front of members. This is a shot pivoted around, looking back at the actual brewery and the actual pop-up use, the pub on the first floor. This is a photograph that was kindly taken, allowed by the actual one of the residents for the case officer to take a photograph looking down at the actual brewery, the outside seating area. You can see there's a new fence just in the distance, the L-shaped fence to the rear, in front of that fence, further away from the actual viewpoint from the photograph. That's where the actual seating area, and you can just see a few of the benches and tables from that view. And this is a view taken from the opposite angle, showing the residential properties in the behind the actual fence and the actual seating area in the frontage. In terms of the key issues of this particular application, the starting point, again, with any decision, is the starting point for the decision-making on all applications is that it must be made in accordance with the development plan unless material considerations indicate otherwise. The application site is located within the development limits of Anstey. The principle of the use of the first floor and garden area of the building as a public house has already been secured through the granting of an earlier permission, that's a 2018 application, which is material planning consideration in this situation, material consideration in this matter. The application itself relates to condition number 5, which was imposed on the application, which limits the actual use of the outside area till 7:30 on the 7:30 on the evening. The application itself proposes to extend that from 7:30 till 9 p.m. So turning to the second point on the key issue, the impact on residential amenity, policy C2 of the core strategy and EV1 of the local plan seeks to protect the amenity of existing and future residents. The Charnwood Design Code, or SPD 2020, also provides guidance to ensure an adequate level of amenity is secured in development. The current permission restricts the use, as stated already, for the garden area till 7:30 p.m. only. The application in front of members this evening proposes to vary that to 9 p.m. It's worth noting that the original application, when submitted, originally proposed 10 p.m. But the officer and environmental health officer, through negotiations with the applicant, reduced that to 9 p.m. because the 10 p.m. distance, or 10 p.m. time was seen to be inappropriate, but 9 p.m. is not. It is considered the use of the garden area until 9 p.m. will inevitably lead to voices and other background noises being heard at a later time. However, it is considered that this use is, given that the use is only until 9 p.m, an additional 1.5 hours beyond the current permitted hours, that this would be acceptable. This is something that has been clarified by the environmental health officer. Therefore, the proposal will not result in any unacceptable impact from the actual use itself on the residents or surrounding area. And it's considered that the proposal will accord with policy CS2 and EV1 of the development plan. In terms of highway safety, this was an issue that was flagged up on the original application when the proposal was used, or sorry, the application came forward for the pop-up use. Highways have been consulted on the application, and given that the only change from this application to the previous application is the extension of 1.5 hours from 7:30 to 9 p.m, no objections have been received from the Highway Authority to the application. In conclusion, in summary, the application proposes the variation of condition number 5 imposed as part of the earlier application to extend the hours to 9 p.m. on that day. And members will note, as part of the recommendation, that a number of conditions to do with the smoking area, this application, were it to be granted to vary the time, and other appropriate application or conditions have been pulled through to part of this application, part of this decision. And if members were to actually consider this appropriate, it is considered that those two conditions, condition 4 and 5, and other legislation that could come forward to look at this through environmental health, would be sufficient to ensure that it wouldn't result in any unacceptable impact to residential amenity or impact on residential properties in the surrounding area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We have 2 speakers on this. I've just lost my list. Excuse me, with you in just one moment. Yes, the first speaker is Carolyn Roberts on behalf of Jean Smith, the objector. Following this speaker, I'll be reading out a statement from Councillor Deborah Taylor Ward, Councillor, who can't be with us tonight. Thank you. Well, if you'd like to sit down for a start.
Yes, thank you.
And would you like... there'll be an amber light comes on over here when there's 1 minute remaining. But Karen could give you a verbal indication that you have 1 minute remaining as well. Are you happy just with the light?
Yes, thank you.
That's lovely. Okay, we'll start when you're ready.
Thank you very much. I'm representing Mrs. Jean Smith, who is the owner resident of 39 Highfield Street, and I think you've just seen some photos of the view from her property over towards this. The first, I'm her daughter, by the way. She's 91 years old, lives on her own, and has lived in that house for 40 odd years. It was the family home. She's now there on her own. So I've come along to represent her. The first point I would like to make is that I'm getting a bit fed up in hearing in reports and in the written report that I've seen that this is a pop-up pub. This isn't a pop-up pub. This is a permanent pub. It's registered at Companies House. The two owners of it describe themselves as publicans on the company's house register, and it is a permanent pub. It's open every day until 10 o'clock in the evening inside. The only point really that we're concerned about is the use of the garden, which is 28 feet from my mum's living room to that fence that you've seen on your pictures. So it's at the end of her front garden, and the fence is the end of the pub garden. She sits in her lounge there, 28 feet from what's going on in the garden, and her bedroom is straight above that. So I wanted just to give you that as a sort of geographical view of what she's putting up with. Now, the original application, when they first asked for this pop-up pub, that again, they asked for a 10 o'clock opening time, which your officers put as a condition on Condition 5 originally in 2018 as 7:30. Now, we've been okay with that. I can't say she's entirely happy, but 7:30 is fairly realistic, and we've put up with that. I don't think anybody has made any sort of serious complaints in the neighbourhood about that, but, of course, bearing in mind that the pub's been shut for a considerable time during the COVID pandemic, there hasn't been an awful lot of opportunity for complaints. And generally speaking, I'm saying I'm putting up with this. Sometimes I have to shut my windows. Sometimes I can't hear my telly, or I can't make a phone call because of noise if my windows are open. But generally speaking, bearing in mind that's mainly in the summer, we'll put up with it. Now, in May this year, the applicant put in for an alteration of the Condition 5, which your officers had recommended from the beginning and imposed. And he put in for 10 o'clock. We put in our submissions and so on, expecting it to be dealt with. And then it was withdrawn and altered to 9 o'clock, as your officer over there said, having had negotiations with Environmental Health and with Nigel Wright, who is a planning officer, who actually I arranged for him to come round to my mum's house. So I think it was him that took those photos that you've seen. So he got a view of what we were putting up with. That was a successful meeting. He went round to see them and so on. But consequently, the 10 o'clock application was withdrawn and the applicant put in for 9 o'clock, which is why you're looking at it today. So it's a 1.5-hour extension. But quite frankly, we don't quite understand why it should be changed. Your officers put it in for 7:30 in the first place to protect the residents. This is a residential area. It's not an industrial area. The building where this is was originally an office storage space, which the applicant then applied to be a pop-up pub. But as I say, it's a pub that is now functioning every day of the week. And the 9 o'clock application that he's now put in is also for every day of the week. So it's not like my mum even gets, say, Sunday off or anything. Now, that's concerning her. It's concerning us. 9 o'clock, although your officer says is within sort of socially acceptable timescales, thank you, isn't to us. I'm not at the age of 91 and not for anybody else in the area. And the other concern I do have is that online we put in applications for when he applied in May. So did comments, so did some of the neighbours. None of them are now appearing. They're not on there now with this application. And we weren't the only ones. He's whipped up quite a few of his customers, you may notice, to say what a good pub he is. Some of those live in Anstey. None of them are close neighbours. And they all put in their objections on the 16th of July altogether, it appears, if you look at the paperwork. But in essence, it's not a pop-up pub. We don't think this is acceptable for anybody to put up with a pub at the end of their garden that was supposed to be pop-up and is now permanent for 9 o'clock, 7 days a week. Particularly, I mean, forget the fact she's elderly, although that is relevant. You know, we don't think it's acceptable in a residential area. So I would hope that you can oppose this, please, or at least defer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Would you like to return to your seat? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. So Deborah Taylor hasn't been able to make it with us tonight, so I'm going to read out her statement. I'm very sorry this time, unable to attend in person this evening, but I was notified very late by the planning department that this item was on the agenda for this evening, and I was unable to change my prior commitment. I called this application to Plans Committee after speaking to residents living very near to this public house. I'm very supportive of local businesses in Anstey, especially after the real struggle they have had during the COVID pandemic. But I must also consider the effect that some businesses can have on local residents. I have concerns regarding the extension of hours for the use of the pub garden until 9 p.m. The original planning application submitted was for them to use the garden until 10 p.m. The applicants were advised that this would not be acceptable, so it's already been recognised that there's an issue with extending hours for the garden use. This pub is situated in a highly residential area, I think she means, and residents have a right to enjoy their homes and gardens with some peace and quiet. I still think extending the opening hours to 9 p.m. is too late. The residents in this area have been very supportive and have put up with noise from this venue for a few years now. This is based on the knowledge that the pub will close at 7:30 so they can enjoy their evening in peace and quiet. This was a very strong case for this condition to be put on in place when the planning permission was originally approved. I have not seen any evidence to remove this condition. There's a mixture of residents living in the area, some who are in their 90s and have noise from the pub garden until 9 p.m. Very close to their bedroom and lounge windows is not fair. With the additional drinking time, it's likely that the noise level could rise, and as it's already stated, the government guidance is to meet outside due to COVID-19, meaning the pub garden would be busier than ever before. If this condition is removed, noise complaints would be very likely be submitted to the council, and this then would be looked at through licensing conditions, which are likely to be stricter than planning conditions. Looking at this application in a balanced way, I think the detrimental effects to local residents outweighs the benefits for the business, and therefore I think this application should be refused. Councillor Deborah Taylor, Ward Member for Anstey. Okay, so I'm just going to ask the planning officer, Mr. Robson, to come back on the points raised.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, just in terms of the crux of it, the actual alteration from 7:30 till 9 p.m., the extra hour and a half, all I can reiterate is just what the environmental health colleagues have said, that they, in this instance now, don't consider it to be an appropriate or an inappropriate extension of time. I mean, these type of uses, you do find them in city centres, and we have policies in the local plan that do encourage this type of use in those particular areas. And that's it, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Nobody's indicated to speak yet. Anybody? Ah, thank you. You're up first.
I don't think 9 o'clock is an unsociable hour. I think it's very, very reasonable. It's a nice little business there, and I think we should encourage it personally. I can't see 9 o'clock being a problem to anybody around the area, and I'd propose we accept the
recommendation.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak, or does it have a seconder? Nobody wishes to speak. Thank you.
It's just one question, really. The officer there said that these extensions were used in city centre applications, and obviously this isn't a city centre application, so I'm just wondering how that's affected, please.
Mr. Robson?
Sorry, through you, Chair. Just my correction, my apologies. I was reading it over my shoulder. It's town centre, what the policy says, not city centre. My apologies.
Thank you. Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. In applications like this, I tend to think, how would I feel if I was a local resident? and I wouldn't really want it going on till 9 o'clock if it was at the bottom of my garden. Maybe 8 o'clock, but not 9 o'clock, so I won't be supporting it.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that. Unfortunately, this is the application that we had before us, so we have to make a decision based on the application and not something else. I have to say, personally, I'm sort of struggling a bit with this. You know, we have a pre-meeting, and it seems as if that it's not unreasonable, and it'd be hard to defend if this was to be turned down. But, you know, you're the members here, and I don't want to... Well, I don't. The proposal's already been made. I personally don't want to second it. But we've got to come to a decision. So, somebody... Sorry, Vice-Chair, Councillor Snart?
Could I just ask officers, I'm just trying to struggle with the reason last time, and it says the premises are closed to residential property and the limit on use is needed to prevent the nuisance or annoyance to nearby residents. And this was the 1930 hours close. Since that time, has there been any problems that have come forward to the environmental health or to the council about noise? I'm just trying to consider what it says there, and it was the reason before it closing at 7:30 because of the nuisance and annoyance to nearby residents. And it'd be nice to know why we've changed that.
Mr. Robson?
Yes, sir, through you, Chair, if I may. In terms of any kind of... complaints received by the environmental health team, we would have been made aware of this as part of this proposal. They would have come forward and said they've had 2, 3, 4, however many objections to, or concerns raised, or they've investigated it on certain dates or times. That information hasn't come forward, so all I can assume is the fact that there hasn't been any complaints that have actually been registered with the environmental health team.
Jacqueline Jackson, would you like to come in?
Yeah, I'd just continue with Mr. Robertson's comments to fully answer Councillor Snart's question about the reasoning. Obviously, it was an unknown use before, and if we hadn't have put a limit on it, then they could have used it 24/7. So it was important to set something at that time, and that's what happened. With planning... everybody has a right to apply to vary things, and we can't not consider it because we made that decision previously. We do have to consider, you know, there has been an application made, and we do have to consider whether it is reasonable with the information in front of us today. So, again, you'll see that in the proposed revised condition, the same reason is put on there, because we still think it's appropriate that some limits are set, and particularly we've also pulled through the other conditions, including condition 4, which is the management plan, because obviously we want to make sure that's retained at the premises.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, if you go move next to a pub, you've got no right to complain. But if a pub moves next to you, I think the lady's got every right to complain. So I'm on her side, really. But also, what's stopping them in 2 years' time coming back for another revision? And so let's open at 11 o'clock.
Well, I'm going to, before I put that to Mr. Robson, that would actually mean another application, I am sure. But I'm going to just ask him to clarify that.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. Just to go up through yourself to go back to that question. I mean, bluntly, there's nothing to stop them coming back in a couple of years' time to vary the actual application. But all I can say is that what we're asking members, what members have been asked to consider this evening, is that extension from 7:30 till 9 p.m. Thank you, Chair.
So, to be clear, that is what's on the table now. If they would come back next week and ask for another variation, that's another application. I know it. That's just the way it works. Does anybody else want to get in on this debate? Thank you.
Again, through Mr. Robson. Mr. Robson, would this additional from 7:30 till 9 p.m. Would that be across full 7 days? Is the pub open 7 days a week?
Sorry, through you, Chair. Yes, it is, would be for on any day. That's what the wording of the condition says at this moment, yes. However, if members were minded to consider that to be perhaps inappropriate for that time, for every single day, that is something they could consider and put back through the Chair for us to for members to